confronting authors with real questions about the writing process, the difficult and disheartening publishing industry, and why anyone would choose to torture themselves in the world of writing, this is the Literally Podcast with your host, writer, runner, and the literary voice of Ogden, Utah, Case Johnston. Exposing literature, the authors, the business, the process. The Literally Podcast. All right, thank you for listening to this podcast. This episode of Literally is sponsored by Lexicon and Line. Case, tell us a little something about Lexicon and Line.
Lexicon and Line, it does three things. They are communications consultants, they teach professional business writing and speaking courses, and they are research and data evaluation experts.
And you can find everything about Lexicon and Line at lexiconandline.com. Please give them a visit, and thank you so much for sponsoring this podcast, Lexicon and Line.
Paul E. LaPierre is a poet based in Portland, Oregon, and his poetry has appeared in several small and now defunct presses. He also has an MFA from Pacific University in Creative Writing.
My elders, they're old working class folks that hang around in bars, especially in the mornings, playing poker or pull tabs while slowly sipping pints of light beer like American-styled pilsners or lagers, with their favorite shots of liquors. And they tell me stories about my grandparents, the names of old bars, and the best parties ever. Sovereignty. When I first started writing, I wanted to write about really serious subjects like tribal sovereignty. And what I realized is it's about much more than casinos, fireworks, and discount smoke shop cigarettes. It is also a really hard word to spell. At the edge of the res, I spent most of my day dreaming about fat sacks of weed and trying not to drink any gin. I spent a while wondering about a beautiful Blackfeet woman. I thought about how at the moment I met her, all I wanted was to learn my language and grow out my hair. But that was so many weeks ago, and now all I want to do is party. Pacific Rim job. On the way up the West Coast, I keep eating Indian salmon with soy sauce and wasabi, and my mind keeps on wandering to what a fine job we've done with fry bread. Sweat. I enter the sweat lodge and I crawl in a circle behind naked men and women, writhing with their heads down to escape the steam. I settle into my place, get quiet, and whisper my prayer. Then I pull out my hand drum and sing 13 songs I make up on the spot. For 7 sweltering rounds, I piss on the red-hot rocks. And I don't do this because there are men and women in the lodge or because half of them are white. This is just how I like to sweat. So, yeah, I mean, those are a few from my chapbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can you give us some background on all of it? I'm basically starting with the chapbook, with the collection, you know, what poems made it into the chapbook and why they did, so on and so forth.
The chapbook was kind of me exploring, more heavily one of the topics of my writing, which was just like sort of these short, sad, ironic poems, me kind of playing with what is expected of me from the audience or the community that I'm reading for, or the, you know, perceived community that I might be from, and those kind of things. I think early on with writing in a setting of study and things like that, I sort of wondered what, like, kind of my wealth was as far as just material to work with, stories, character, all of these kind of details. And I realized that, having a Native American background, that I had, you know, loads of just stereotypes, cliches, expectations, and So for me, I was just like, oh, well, this is going to be fun. I'm going to actually just play with it and, you know, maybe feign towards what you're going to expect or lead in a direction that sounds familiar and then just let it all kind of crumble and fall apart. And, you know, for me, that was really funny. And I mean, I guess also just kind of created a lot of space for me to explore my own work, explore identity, you know, where I think things are going or not have to necessarily, you know, pack up and be that guy, whatever that, you know, perception is.
Right.
So, I mean, for me, that's been fun and to watch it change, to see how, you know, at the time when I was writing this, it was kind of like, maybe more edgy than today, but, or like, you know, as sort of a time stamp for me. Well, just to kind of see where, you know, I, you know, kind of like following my education backwards is different writers that I was interested in, different storylines that, you know, sort of fascinated me. And it was pretty consuming. It was, because a lot of the details, you know, further into the chapbook, it, you know, since I am playing with the stereotypes and cliches, I do end up with, you know, really tragic stuff, you know, sort of, the trickster, kind of like, you know, coyote is tricky, all those kind of things, recur. And, to me, that's great because in this way, I'm kind of, you know, making fun of all these things and trying to distance myself. But at the same time, I'm completely embracing them, like, at times living them and, you know, adding in full circle sort of like tragic stuff, which, you know, to me is fun, but also, you know, it's like, you know, it's like, yeah, well, I figured out that I'm good at writing dark little decrepit poems and, you know, whatever, yeah. It was fun.
Yeah. And there, I mean, you're right. They're, you know, and the ones you shared with us, they are extremely succinct. And I've written down quite a few notes based on just what your opening was, and I'm excited to explore that quite a lot more. This is Case Johnson. It's the Literally Podcast. Today we're talking to Pacific Northwest poet Paul Rowley. He's sharing some of his poetry with us, his background with us, the way he engages the writing process and what he's done in the past and where he is today. We're podcasting from my home in Ogden, Utah. Paul, where are you today? Are you in Portland?
No, I'm in Northwest Montana.
That's right, right. What city is it?
It's a little tiny town called Summers, Montana,
okay.
On the north end of Flathead Lake.
And how long have you been there?
I've been here for a few months.
Yeah. Okay. Good. So when we're looking at the, I wanted to get back to a few of the things that you brought up when you're discussing your chapbook, and for our listeners, can you tell us the name of the chapbook and when it was published and all of that?
Yeah, the chapbook is titled The Listerine Martini by Paul E. LaPierre, and it was done by Lady Bones. They're a small press publisher out of Los Angeles now, mm-hmm. And this was done in, I believe, the fall of 2015.
Okay.
So.
Okay, so it's just like, yeah, my last book came out in 2015. It feels like 10 years ago, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, you know, well, I think it's interesting to go back sometimes. Well, you know, because it is, it's a question of like, why the hell do we do this? Like, let me see, you know, I'm about to start doing this crazy thing again. Like, what was I thinking then, you know?
Yeah.
And what did I think was good or funny or, because really like, that little time span is giant, especially when I think about like even just humor, you know, or mm-hmm. like what was, you know, considered to be, you know, okay for, you know, humor and what is not okay.
And, yeah.
where you just don't, you don't want to go anymore, or, you know, too late, you already did, or, you know, whatever it is. But for me, I think all those things, like, you know, they kind of do matter to me. And like, even just trying to get ready for this was like, well, oh yeah, you know, why do I do this? And you know, I might think of writers that influenced me, and I'll look and say, yeah, geez, like, well, boy, I don't wish that life on myself. But at the same time, the work is still being read, and you know, still being kind of mulled over again. So for me, like, you know, I have to do that. I have to check and look and see, you know, one, the process, or like, because I remember, like, for this chapbook, I moved to even a more remote place than where I'm at now. And I sort of just locked myself in a tiny cabin. And, you know, at first this thing, it was entitled The Listerine Martini, but it only had, like, the low spots were, you know, very obvious, and things got better, and, you know, I sort of storied it. I tried to do as many different, like, orders as possible, you know, considered all the things, basically. Like, initially I wanted a choose your own adventure, or have a centerfold, or, you know, whatever. Just crazy stuff. And then, of course, you know, everyone's already done it. And, so for me, I was like, well, like, still, I had to go back to, what do I have? Like, at that time, I was living on a tiny community on the edge of a reservation.
Yeah.
And really being, you know, completely alienated by everything, climate, community, just, like, experience, all these different things. And so I didn't have any distractions. I just had me, like, mulling over this, you know, thing that I had to do. And so when I finally did, I was like, oh, you know, I really boiled this down to, like, I've been sickened by it myself, you know? Like, oh, my God, are you, you know, can you really do that? It's like, oh, yeah, totally, I have to. Like, this is going to be fun. And, you know, as it unravels, hopefully, there'll be, you know, like, chances like this to just talk about, like, you know, the process of it, you know, like, what you were going through, potentially. And for me, I was just like, you know, I had been playing with this, you know, crazy idea of being a writer or putting something out there, and, you know, all up until the point of actually putting it together and, you know, considering, like, you know, what you're comfortable with, or what is humorous to you, or any of those kind of things, are like, oh yeah, it's going to be measured. And like, who knows, like, what are your expectations?
Sure.
For me, it was just fun to read, like, oh, a poetry book, like, sells, like, 200 copies. So I was like, oh, okay, great. Like, I'm not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, most of our books sell 200 copies if we're lucky. You know, I mean, we'd need, someday, right? Someday we'll bust it out. So
yeah, you know, but, I mean, even that, like, to go back and, you know, whatever, that's fine with me. I mean, that's not necessarily why I do it. I mean, you know, if I think about it, at the time of writing this, I still had, you know, some sort of, you know, after school, like, continued interest in my writing. And so, you know, I would get to go on a residency, or, you know, get to go, you know, do workshop again, stuff like that. But it was also at the same time, my visual art stuff was, you know, interesting for people. And so I was doing both, and, it was maddening. I really didn't like it, but I understood they could both work together and do in some ways. And so for like the deluxe edition of my chapbook, I had paper made from the weaving ends from my cedar bark. And that was made into like a handmade, you know, it's all these chapbooks are hand sewn, and like, you know, they are with old vintage paper. They've got a letterpress cover. So they're, you know, to me, like, the artistic aesthetic, I guess, I still, you know, got to have like some sort of influence on that. And then with the deluxe edition, it ended up being a $200 book, which, like, people aren't really going to buy. But, you know, it did make it to, you know, some institution that, It's in their rare book collection now. And so for me, that's like, you know, it was my crazy idea that kept going. And, you know, there was interest at times. You know, most of the poems have been published by, you know, other small presses or people's, you know,
yeah,
good maniacal weekend activity, you know, that
yeah.
turned into like, you know, 7 issues or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, reality came crashing down. But
yeah.
I don't know. I still like all those things. And especially now because I feel like I only started writing with the internet. And so like, I never got paid, you know, I got like subscriptions to shit that I was like, whatever, you know,
yeah.
I was just like, and then, you know, continued more of that, or, you know, and even still like with the chapbook, I get it. It's fun to read in bars, you know, they're short, you're sort of greasy, they make people laugh, and, you know?
Yeah.
And so like a lot of times I'm like, oh, well, you know, I guess like with any of these writing things, like, you know, I see comedians, they're, you know, they at least get 2 drink tickets. And sometimes that seems like a thing to me. I was like, well, crap, like, what am I doing? Like, we're working for free. Blah, blah.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, but on the other, you know, side of that, there's, you know, far fewer poets, and we can apply for all sorts of, you know, ridiculousness, all those kind of things. But, it's still, you know, there's the fun performance part and all that stuff. But I mean, ultimately, yeah, you know, I mean, I guess like, yeah, it's like it's a weird thing. And I might not necessarily view it as a financial thing anymore at a certain point.
Yeah.
You know, like your weird ideas, you know, those whatever, you know, 200 people that, you know, might get a chuckle or whatever. Or,
yeah, but it's,
you know,
it's worth it though. And it kind of goes back to, what you said a little while ago. You said for this chapbook, you put yourself on the outskirts, you put yourself, made yourself completely alone, right? To write it, to pull it together, to do all the hard work. And then right in the middle of that, when you're telling us that, you used one word that I think is really, really important. And I think it speaks a lot to what you're talking about as an artist. And, you said, I had to finish this. You know what I mean? I had to do this. It wasn't, you know, I wanted to go out into a small place and be completely alone because I wanted to finish this. You said, you know, I had to do it. What does that had to do it mean for people who, for instance, don't feel like they have to do it?
I mean, yeah, I have no idea. Even for me to be back in you know, the community that I grew up in, there is like a strange like full circle thing where, you know, in some ways I can't understand why I want to leave to like such a beautiful place with, you know, so many positive things about it. But then at the same time, I could never imagine myself just, you know, not being curious about, you know, reconnecting all these different things that I've always felt, you know, being, you know, in the city in Seattle or Portland or the gorge or coast, or, you know, connecting with, you know, family ties that, you know, where maybe I've never been there before, but like that's, you know, part of my ancestry or something. So really in this way, I've just been going out and, I guess in some way, you know, figuring out what the heck the story is for me. You know, I mean, I come from so many different, native communities, I guess, just from having such a mixed tribal heritage and experience, that for me those are all really important. But like, you know, the more that I've gone, the more that I just keep finding like, oh yeah, well, you know, whatever. Like I can look at it a million different ways, but essentially for me, I feel like, since it is such a smaller fragment of me than even like I might ethnically look, it's like there's cultural, there's family ties, there's all these different things that is like, it's this bizarre position where I'm in, where I'm like, oh yeah, actually I'm like assimilation works in this weird way,
right,
where, you know, labor shit or, you know, all these different aspects, these are great, you know, maybe in this community, this is like the true one story. And like, that is the number one thing. But like, if you have like, you know, for me, like 7, 8 of those, where like, those are all true, like they're all great, you know, like we're the best, you
right.
know, of mm-hmm. course, you know, but you know, then I'm just as mixed on like, you know, I guess my, you know, European side and, you know, like, just 1 second. Yeah, that's acts like nobody ever comes over here, ever.
I know. I think you're lying to us. You're in Seattle.
Yeah. I don't even remember what the fuck I was talking about now.
You were like, oh, it's okay. I got a question for you. We'll go from there.
Well, and I was going to say, okay, before that question, sounds a lot like podcasting financially there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, whatever. It just seems like to me, like, I mean, for years, when my chapbook, I was really looking at all these different ways to do it and basically being like, okay, well, all the things that were the establishings are like, fuck now, you know, or like, who cares? Like, whatever, your names in that thing are great. Like, you know,
yeah.
Yep. Other bums I know have been in that, like, who cares? Like, and now that you're starting to see, I think, like a lot of the publishing or ways to get your work out there have changed, and they're, you know, they're changing across the board. Like, probably, like, you know, writers are, of course, are going to be slow and obnoxious, and, you know, all the gatekeepers of everywhere are going to be threatened, and, you know what I mean? Then if you go through this whole cycle of, like, what's going to work, and, you know, clearly everything keeps changing really fast, but I think they're doing this independent kind of stuff, and that's, like, why the, you know, the chapbook is, like, just, you know, someone I found online that looked cool, and, you know, they turned out to be cool, I lucked out, but, like, we really don't know what the hell we're doing.
No.
Except for, you know, to make the thing and make it feel good and make it, you know, have real stuff about it, you know, and then, like, learn from your mistakes or whatever, you know. It's like, to me, that's like, doing a podcast is more exciting because I was like, who's doing them? And, you know, there was a couple that were, you know, very produced, very much like, very still, you know, establishment, you know, jumping on a cool thing. But the more that I hear, like, you know, the, like, at least interesting, you know, people's experience is like really happening in real time is, you know, that's fun for me.
You know, who uses podcasting a lot from what I've seen in the industry are minority voices, because it's an even playing field. You just got to start a podcast and get your voice out there. And I think, the minority communities have really embraced that, which is kind of fun to see.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. As long as it's fun and gets better, and, you know, it isn't like this totally serious bummer time. You know, I've looked for podcasts that had really fun titles, really fun names, and then, you know, it just sounded like, you know, I don't know, some angry bandwagon class or something, and I was like, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're drinking beer, so, you know. We at least got that going for us. Yeah.
Yeah. We always start that right. I think my question now is, you talked about what got you to this point where there's the chapbook, obviously, and I know exactly what you mean in the sense of you send it out there, you have no idea what the hell is going to happen to it. Who's it really for? I've asked myself that a million times. Why do I keep writing? Where are you going now? And what is the drive that's keeping you writing now as a poet in this time period, with these things happening, many different things happening across the cultural landscape? I mean, now that you're out there isolated again, is the poetry coming?
I think, I mean, it's good because it just comes on sometimes, especially if I'm busy with other projects. And, but like this crazy urge just comes over me, like, probably last month, I was in Missoula, and it just seemed like everyone was having so much fun. You know, it was beautiful outside.
Yeah.
You know, it was just incredible. And so I had to look up an open mic and just go in there and read. I'd written some new stuff, and I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm going to read a couple things from my chapbook and read new work and see how it goes. And, you know, in some of these smaller towns, you get a mix of everything at an open mic. It could be, you know, acoustic guitars,
yeah,
or a singer, or who knows, a puppet person,
yeah,
any of those kind of things. And so for me, that's like kind of exciting, because I already know that,
Yeah.
But yeah, well, so it was just like this super decrepit, and I keep saying that, but this was a gross poem. It was like right after, I guess maybe it was longer, but after Bourdain died, I was what a bummer, like bacon wasn't enough, he couldn't be like, well, whatever, tomorrow I get bacon, just be done with the day.
You know what? I was pissed and sad. That one affected me,
me. I mean, I guess it was enough for me to write a poem about being a restaurant bum myself, who, gave the writing thing a whirl, stuff like that. So, I just went and read it at an open mic, and in Montana, you can have like a whole family at the bar.
Right.
So,
yeah.
So I read my poetry, and the back just like goes to the patio, and it just progressively gets a handful of like other performers laughing. So, it's fun. It's like, and I hadn't been, I hadn't done anything writing wise for like a year,
Yeah.
I did a podcast thing, which, it's just become a lot more sporadic, but anytime that I get a chance, to do something that, might work with someone else's project, or I'll see, even just like, I help with the whole, I see like a format kind of developing more out of people who are podcasting things that, can be quite boring, poetry, a night of poetry. Oh, we're going to have 8 poets tonight. It's like, who's going to hear that? No one's going to hear that. And,
yeah.
And so, I think it's a fun, you can write as short, as silly, as, playful, as, deep, of all those kind of things if you want. And, because sometimes, I see fiction writers, they have to go, restore order at the, at the reading and get people into, page 237.
Oh, God.
Good luck, man.
I know. No, readings are not for prose people. They're just not. Readings are for poets. Because you can't, I've been to too many readings, when a fiction writer or even a creative nonfiction writer, they spend 15 minutes introducing the chapter, and then it's 15 minutes of the chapter, then it's 15 minutes talking about the chapter, and you're like, holy shit, shut up.
Everyone's lost. I guess why you keep trying is, you probably still, obviously, some of those readings you go to and you're like, oh, I can't believe whatever, I'm there, gone. Just keep doing that. I don't care. I don't care the setup. It's this amazing thing. I guess that's one thing that I do notice, I miss, is being around some of that stuff where I don't really have to plan it. I can, just sneak off to some really quality, maybe craft talk, or someone is reading in town where it's just like everything goes back to practically the innocence of being a kid, before bed, getting the story time where you know everything where it is in your imagination, as it's going on. It's across the board great human experience, I think. I miss that stuff, but, I mean, for me, that's, I guess that's what it's about. If you can, you know, shut up a room, turn it into one, you know, it's like, that feels so amazing because you know that you're like kind of like able to be on the other end of that where, you know something is enjoyable and, meaningful. So.
Yeah, I agree. And I've listened to Paul's poetry for, for a couple of years there in a row when we were in school together, and I always liked it, you know, and I think that's kind of like, when I look for people to be on the podcast, I gotta like their stuff, you know? I mean, that's kind of my test. And one question about what you said earlier about change and watching yourself grow. What have you seen? I mean, if you can pin it down, if there's any concrete examples of what you were doing earlier in your poetry and what you may not be doing now. And I know you brought it up that culturally a lot of stuff has changed since 2015. Stuff you were places you wouldn't want to go, or places you probably shouldn't have went, or you already went there. And like you said before, what have you seen in yours? I mean, I know personally with mine, all I did when I first started writing was try to be David Sedaris. You know, I tried to be funny, and now I don't write anything funny anymore. And I can't even do it. I try to write something funny, and it's horseshit. And that's being just completely honest with myself. What have you seen? Have you seen things that you say have dropped off from your poetry from the beginning?
Well, I mean, I guess it's, I don't think it's dropped off, like it really, you know, within poetry, but yeah, like other writing, I feel like I can write about other things and actually, you know, take something seriously and sort of like, you know, not just go for the, you know, the first funny kind of thing that comes to mind or keep it going. And in the past, I feel like, those are like great days of just like, a lot of irony and nihilism and, you know, just enjoying the narcissistic pursuit of being, an educated writer and all those kind of things. So, it's fun. It's like everyone is kind of like, whatever, like, you know, you know, whether or not people would, you know, I had so many people just come to me and just immediately start talking about Bukowski to me. And, you know, I mean, I enjoyed Bukowski, but I was like, you know, a lot of it was like, you know, I don't remember that. I was like, I was really quite young when I read that. And, I guess it was good, or, you know, all these kind of things, I think, just kind of come into perspective a little bit more. And, you know, I was, you know, like I said, just, you know, I like jokes. I like the, you know, the turn in poetry. It's like, it doesn't always have to be, you know, me dropping it down and kind of making things sort of meaningless. And, you know, so like, I guess like, yeah, some of that stuff. I mean, and, you know, with the chapbook, I really liked Richard Brautigan, and I like this, like, these sort of sappy, sad, you know, little poems about his broken heart and what, you know what I mean? It was just like a great repetition. And so I was like, I'm totally going to be like that guy who, you know, in these same cities as him, like, weekly motel, like whatever, all that kind of overdone bum writer stuff. But I was like, you know, it was fun for me. It's great. Yeah, you know, yeah. I know how to eat at a 7-Eleven and not, you know, like I don't have great health, but you know, it's like I can do it.
I know what you mean. This is Case Johnson. This is Literally Podcast. We're broadcasting from my home in Ogden, Utah. Today, our guest is Paul Rowley. He's a poet from the Pacific Northwest, sharing a lot of thoughts about really what it is to be a poet, be an artist, what motivation comes from, and insights into the bar life in Montana, which, you know, I'm in Utah. You can't even have kids or families within 25 feet of the bar entrance or whatever, you know? And so it's like, you don't have to worry. You can definitely walk into a bar and say, fuck, and you're not going to worry about the kids in the back. That's for damn sure. So we've got about 5 minutes left. And I wanted to talk really briefly, and you can take it wherever you want to, because I've really enjoyed talking to you and just listening to your perspective on this stuff. So I'll, but it goes back to what you said at the very beginning of the podcast. This idea used to really, to me, words that stuck out, and it was like, you came to the poet's life with your background, which what you called was your wealth, you know, from being Native American, from the traditions, from the communities you were a part of and not a part of. Paul sent me, what would you call that, your first chapter of assimilation that you sent me?
Yeah.
Yeah. And Paul was talking just a minute ago about taking stuff seriously when it comes to other writing. And, he sent me this first chapter of a memoir. And it's the title is Assimilation. And, it really does dig into what Paul's childhood life was like. What that wealth is that Paul talked about at the beginning of this podcast. And it talked about this chapter, and I hope that someday he gets finished, and I hope it gets subbed, because I really enjoyed the hell out of reading this. It was good. It had so much voice to it. So someday soon, hopefully, Paul, you'll be telling us that you want to be back on the podcast, because this thing just got picked up. So you talk about your wealth of what you bring to being a poet, and then you talk about perception and flipping perception on its head. Can you kind of delve into that a little bit more with that first chapbook, and any reaction you got from any surprised reaction you got from people who read the book?
I've gotten like everything from I love it. It's great. Like, you know, not a whole lot of reason and then I've also gotten, I hated it, or a lot of just, you know, maybe a couple of, you know, leading questions. Maybe I'll give something up, but I'm not, you know, I'm totally not going to give that up. And so, I'll get interesting if people are kind of like, hey, I don't know what to do with this. And to me, that's great as well, because, some worldviews are going to find this problematic, I guess. And that's fine for me, because, you know, I mean, as it goes, there's such a expectation, I would say. Like, if I go in front of a Native audience, they might laugh at some things, like, now this is an inside thing, or because, you know, and so my favorite places to read the thing are actually like border towns, like right near a reservation, where I'm going to get like, you know, just like the regular local, like, people have in a lot of these places, people have, you know, they're employed by the casino, or, you know, they run into the fisheries, or, you know, whatever the hell it is. And so for me, when those audiences are both laughing, like, at the things that I think are funny about being, from two different backgrounds, from like, these opposing experiences in a lot of places, and that I can make the room one where it is like, you know, racial things are brought up, like the folly of kind of each other's perceptions are brought to light. And for me, that's like, yeah, I mean, that's the best. Like, I actually feel like, I get to be my whole self, and my sense of humor or my perspective it's not taken so seriously that, like, oh, like, he hates Indians. No, he hates white people. What does it mean? It's like, well, yeah, it's art, you know, it's on the page. It's like, it has nothing, you know, whatever. It's like, that's the fun thing about it. Like, what are you talking about? Everyone wants to, like, you know, it's, you know, yeah, it's, it's fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to do that. It's, you know, I mean, I don't, you know, always know where it's going, but the more that I've, like, I guess, worked on, you know, the place, I mean, it's fun stuff, you know what I mean? It leads to other things in my life where I'm like, oh, yeah, it's right there in front of me. I just have to look at it this way, or move it around, or engage with it, or, you know, put it into some more context. And then, you know, that's, like, I guess, the fun part of any of the artistic process is being able to just kind of, like, you know, go for it and, you know, hope the best for when you land, and, you know, do it enough times and keep doing it. Like, that's, like, I guess that's the deal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's a, and it's never something you can just, you can pin down. You can
let me blab about that assimilation diary really quick.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Do.
I mean, and the assimilation diary is something that I know it's, I guess it was me kind of being like, oh, well, my work isn't hateable enough. Like, everything's become so much, you know, either ignored, I guess, or else, even censored or any of the kind of stuff that goes on now. But I was like, well, these are real things, you know. I mean, with assimilation, I can just look at all of, you know, my tribal family trees, and it's not like, definitely there's a policy out there, or like a lingering policy, but then you have back and forth, but then you also have, you know, the tribal communities that change, and they're like, actually, yeah, we don't like that. Like, you can't be our tribe plus the enemy tribe plus, like, you know. And so I'm like, okay, well, no, I totally get it. And for me, I'm very fine with these really clinical kind of examinations of it, and then saying, oh, well, this is actually how it's like impacted my generation and my, you know, whatever, you know, however I am identifying myself in that situation. And I don't really have a problem with that. I don't think it's like a threat to my understanding of myself, my history, my culture, all the way down the line. I'm fine with, sort of accepting it, because it looks really difficult to try to maintain all of these different like identities and the right thing. And so for me, I mean, as far as all that kind of craziness goes, I'm fine with it. Like, even watching like today, I'm like, yeah, well, that's what happens. You know, I mean, I don't want to be like the super party pooper, but like when everyone has decided they're all going to be like in their corners with their shivs, getting their crazy stories correct. I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, I don't know. No one wants any other space right now. It's just fucking, you know, identity, like stuff and, suspicion and all these kind of things. So I don't know. It's fun for me to just bumble with some of this stuff sometimes. But as far as the assimilation stuff goes, I feel like I actually have to be a little bit more cautious, because it's such a key term that it's like just, it just keeps going, you know. Yeah. And you know, where that goes and where I want it to go for me is not of trying to do something I'm not, or some self-hatred, or, you know, trying to write all of history or create a revolution, or, you know, any of these big terms that are just like complete rhetoric now. You know, I mean, like, you know, I feel like if I wanted to be the artist writer who's going to tell you about, we're going to decolonize and, you know, get away from all the, oh, we're going to have, you know, I don't know what the hell, you know, whatever the idea, whatever magic thing is going to save everyone. I'm like, I'm fine with just dealing with the words and the reality, the historical stuff, the stuff that I can understand. And, you know, I mean, I don't feel like it diminishes my spiritual existence, because I, in this crazy way where I'm denying all that stuff, trying to smash it out, not be associated with it. Like, it's too bad, you know, my process leads me back there. And I'm like, oh yeah, this is why I do this. This is like so rewarding. And, I get to be a part of a community of other people that, you know, I don't even necessarily have to like their work or any of that stuff, but I enjoy watching people try and get better and do new things and, you know, discover. To me, that is pretty cool, you know? I mean,
it is.
It sounds a little too positive out of me. But,
yeah. Well, this is Case Johnson. This is the Literally Podcast. Today we had Paul Raleigh on, and he is talking to us from Montana. Thanks for talking to us. I mean, this is a lot of fun. We had some technical issues at the beginning, but we got it worked out. It all worked out really good. And thanks, Paul. Hope to have you on again. If I'm any time I'm in Montana, I should stop by. It's a big state. I know that.
Yeah. Big state with a few people, so.
Yeah, I know, big state with very few people. It's a big place. Well, thanks. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for listening to this podcast. This episode of Literally is sponsored by Lexicon and Line. Case, tell us a little something about Lexicon and Line.
Lexicon and Line, it does three things. They are communications consultants. They teach professional business writing and speaking courses, and they are research and data evaluation experts.
And you can find everything about Lexicon and Line at lexicononline.com. Please give them a visit. And thank you so much for sponsoring this podcast, Lexicon and Line.